Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I have anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. Thank you for joining us on this Sunday between the holidays, between Christmas and New Year. I am joined today by one of those podcasters we've been talking about over the last month or so. Podcasters that are making content to do actual real work in the real life outside of the media space. When I started gathering a list together of people that I wanted to talk to and share their work with you guys, one of the people on the top of my list was Miss Nina Instead, the host of the Already Gone podcast. Welcome, Nina.
Thank you. Good morning, Bob, and I hope you had a great Christmas.
Oh, I did. I'm recovering now. I feel I've eaten too much. I feel terrible.
Yes.
My family and I, we all went, which was just a really sweet Christmas thing, as we all got together last night on Christmas Day and went to watch Nosferatu.
Oh, fun.
Which was a real Christmassy movie. And ate too much popcorn and too many snacks, so now I'm recovering.
Excellent. Yeah, we had Christmas with friends and again, ate a lot of wonderful food and drank some beautiful drinks and a very happy holiday, but it's time to get a little cleaner and give my body a break.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, I want to get into, first thing I want to do, Nina, is I know I've had you on before when we were doing True Crime Binge, but I wanted to share your work with more of our full Truth and Justice audience. So can you tell everybody a little bit about the Already Gone podcast, how long you've been doing it, and what the mission of the podcast is?
So I started the Already Gone podcast back in 2016. And to be perfectly honest, I did not know what I was getting into. I just wanted to tell some cool stories and investigate the criminal history of the Detroit area and Michigan and the Great Lakes region. And what I ended up doing was building relationships with community members, with family members. I ended up working as a missing persons advocate, and I use the podcast to tell stories that need to be told, and then also work with families to make sure that they're getting their loved one's story out there, be it via social media or by podcast or connecting with news agencies for missing persons and unsolved crimes.
Great. And so, and you were much like me, I started about the same time. I started in 2015, didn't really know what I was doing, didn't know what like the podcast was going to look like, what the purpose of it, but then it kind of revealed itself to me as, you know, as time went on, kind of similarly to what happened with you. What did you do prior to starting the podcast?
So I joke that podcasting is my third career. My first career, I was a admissions coordinator for an inpatient psychiatric program.
Okay.
I did that healthcare marketing for about 10 years. And then I did teaching. I worked in the schools as a technology specialist mm-hmm. for several years. And then my daughter got sick, so I needed to be home with her. She's much better now. Everything's fine. But it had me at home for the first time in decades. And I was going a little stir crazy and told my husband I wanted to start a podcast. And he came home with a microphone for me so that I could start my podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What I love about the story is, and I hope it encourages like our people that are listening, is like you've become like a massive presence in the space, in the real life space of people, you know, especially we're both from Michigan. Here in Michigan, as soon as you talk about any missing persons or anything like that, everybody knows who Nina Instead is. And I think it's really cool that you went from a career and a background that had nothing to do with that. And you just took the initiative to start doing this work. And then you just like built into this position. And similarly, like I was a fireman and started doing a podcast about it. And now it always amazes me when I get an email from an Innocence Project somewhere that wants me to work on a case. Like I have no background. I've just learned on the fly for the last 10 years how to right. do all this stuff.
Right. And leveraged relationships to get information and help people and be a support. But I think we both came from helping professions.
Yeah, for sure.
Which makes a difference.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that you came from education too, that you worked in that background. Because for those of you who don't know, I think I've mentioned this before, but Nina has been a big help to my investigative journalism students. It started off with some of my students were working on some missing persons cases that Nina had covered on her podcast, and they reached out. And then, of course, you had connections with more and more people. So, and I believe they were going to set up to do like an official interview with you so that when they release their podcast, that your voice will be heard on it. Have they set that up?
Not yet, but I imagine that'll happen after the first of the year.
Yeah, they were writing scripts for their first few episodes for the last couple of weeks leading up into the Christmas break. But yeah, I know that you were on the list of people they wanted to hear from. And it's been a cool community. We talked to Mike Morfer, they talked to Jim Clementi, they talked to Jenny Decker, all these other creators in the space that have come on to help them like learn what they're doing and get a little more traction in the cases they're covering. So can you talk a little bit about what is the kind of the format of Already Gone? Like what could people expect if they listen to your episodes? What are you trying to do with them?
I'm trying to get back into covering lesser known unsolved cases that need attention. And just last week, I'm writing a book, which we'll get back to. But last week I met with a public safety director about the only unsolved murder in his little town. And I asked if he had considered Charles Shaw for the case. Shaw was posthumously attached to two murders in the Oakland County area along the Grand River Corridor, and he'd never heard the name. And that's the type of work that I really like doing, is making those connections, not just for listeners, but for law enforcement also, because mm-hmm. you don't necessarily know what's going on in another county or in another region, and it could be relevant to your case. So I'm trying, making those connections is very important to me, and looking for those connections is something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah. And are you still releasing podcasts every week?
The first and the 15th.
First and the 15th of every
month. Yes. Yeah. Next month, it'll be out on the 10th because I take the first off. So I do the 10th and then February 1st, just to give myself a little break for the holiday.
Sure. Yeah. And it's interesting. I've seen with my students how a lot of these cases become interconnected. I think the first student to reach out for you was a case that you all are going to hear about on my students' podcast coming up, and Nina has covered it as well, was the missing persons case of Paige Rinkowski. And they reached out to you and talked to you, and you made some connections for them, and also yes. the Stephen Kraft case,
yes.
Which is another group is working on. You helped us make some connections there, and I think you've helped with most of them, because I think because you were the one that made the connections with Tanya from the Skelton Brothers.
Yeah, their mom.
Yep. So they've made all those connections. But the group working on Paige's case started, you know, they're kind of getting frustrated running into dead ends. I said, well, you know, expand out, look at, based on some of the advice you'd give them, look for other similar cases or anything else in the area. Because her case, again, you guys will be hearing about it soon, but, you know, it was an odd one where she was just seen on the side of the road, on the side of the highway, and then just disappeared off the face of the earth after that.
Left her car running, left her shoes and her purse in the car.
Yeah. It was an insane case. Well, then they've now found two other missing persons cases. So like that group, each group is doing their own series.
Yes.
That group is doing the like missing from East Lansing, you know, all different people.
There's a handful.
Yeah. They're covering that one. Connie, I can't remember the last name of the other individual they found, but very similar circumstances, not similar circumstances, but like close to the same area and same thing. Car was found. She was disappeared. There were some connections there. And then you had suggested mentioned the Chris Temple case.
Yes.
And my one student, Gracie, like really took, you had talked a little bit about that case, how it was frustrating because his case didn't get much press.
It didn't.
Yeah. So she had come to me after talking to you and they looked into her and another student named Asia who looked into it quite a bit. And they're like, is there a way that we can include this? Because Nina was right. Nobody's ever talked about this. And this young boy went missing. And so they're including that in the same group of them. But it's as soon as you start pulling on those threads, you find that there's more and more and more connections to all of them.
Yes. And I just got an email yesterday about a case from 1975. They're looking for other similar cases from that time frame. And I start pulling out names and they're like, yes, right area, right name, right time frame. It's important to make those connections because I think that some people are in prison for one murder when they've committed multiple. And then I also think there's people out there that have committed one murder, like the Amy Hooper case in Ohio, and they just haven't been caught yet.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about your work outside of the podcast. I think I knew about this, but I got a better understanding when you were talking to my kids about your work with the Missing in Michigan organization. Can you kind of share what that organization is and what you do with them?
Sure. Missing in Michigan provides support to families and law enforcement for missing persons cases. Sometimes we are just doing something simple like making a flyer. Other times we're putting families in contact with resources. We assist the Michigan State Police in training law enforcement every May, which is something I'm super proud of, that work. We train detectives from all over the state who come in and learn how to better investigate a missing persons case. Because if you're a smaller department or you've never worked a missing persons case, it's helpful to learn from people who have investigated dozens, if not hundreds of them. And being a part of that training is really special to me.
Yeah, that's, and again, your background has nothing to do with that. And that's what I think, anyone listening to this right now that has an interest and just wants to help and make a difference, you can. Like Nina is a perfect example of like, you're training law enforcement officers how to investigate missing persons case from someone who has not had any background in that prior to starting the podcast.
Michigan State Police does the training. I want to be clear, I'm not doing the training. Michigan State Police does the training.
Okay,
we provide lunch for the attendees, which is a nice incentive to get people to come.
Mm-hmm.
I did in the last year and a half complete a victims advocacy program because I wanted to be better at what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I did that program online. I'm now a credentialed victims advocate. And I learned, you know, I feel like I know a lot because I've been doing this for 5 years, but I learned so much from the victims advocacy course. And I felt like it made me a better advocate.
A well-built wardrobe is about pieces that work together and hold up over time. And that's what Quince does best. Premium materials, thoughtful design, and everyday staples that feel easy to wear and easy to rely on. Quince has the everyday essentials that I actually use. Organic cotton sweaters, polos that work with just about anything, lighter jackets that keep you warm when the seasons start changing. It's all the stuff you reach for over and over again. They work directly with top factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're not paying for brand markups. You're just paying for quality clothing. And they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. For me, I ordered a pair of their corduroy pants, and they're giving me straight-up retro vibes from high school back in the 90s. They look great, feel great, and they didn't cost what you would expect for this level of quality. So listen, you can up your wardrobe game too, and they got a great deal just for our listeners. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/rough for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/rough. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rough. A well-built wardrobe is about pieces that work together and hold up over time. And that's what Quince does best. Premium materials, thoughtful design, and everyday staples that feel easy to wear and easy to rely on. Quince has the everyday essentials that I actually use. Organic cotton sweaters, polos that work with just about anything, lighter jackets that keep you warm when the seasons start changing. It's all the stuff you reach for over and over again. They work directly with top factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're not paying for brand markups. You're just paying for quality clothing. And they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. For me, I ordered a pair of their corduroy pants, and they're giving me straight-up retro vibes from high school back in the 90s. They look great, feel great, and they didn't cost what you would expect for this level of quality. So listen, you can up your wardrobe game too, and they got a great deal just for our listeners. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/rough for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/rough. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rough.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yeah, that's great. I was just reading Susan in our Patreon chat just said that her company's using AI to do work more efficiently. She wants to know if you're aware, is law enforcement working on how they can use AI to connect cases by locations? Like, it seems like a tool that maybe they should be tapping into. You're aware of them?
I'm not, but it sounds like something that higher level law enforcement, like maybe the FBI, might be looking into.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy how, like, we watch so much TV and consume all this content about all these cases, and it always feels like everything's so connected. But then when they start, and so one of my groups is the group that was working on the Skelton Brothers case, and they still are, but that one, I'm sure you're aware that the other John Skelton is less than a year away now from getting out of jail. We've actually been communicating with him through JPay, and we've been talking to Tanya, but they're trying to, right now there's hearings going on where they're trying to get the boys declared dead so that they could charge him with murder. So while things are kind of playing out there, they were looking at some other cases they could cover. And there's a case, the woman's name was Chelsea Small, was the victim. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that one?
I am. I've did an episode on Chelsea's case. Spoke with Taylor Law Enforcement about Chelsea's case, and I have my own opinions about Chelsea's case, but yeah, I am familiar.
Oh, we got a little bit of time. I want to pick your brain because so they brought it to me, and this case is Chelsea worked in a cash advance type place, and where people come in like cash their paychecks early or take advances on their paychecks, and it was the type of place where you had to like hit a buzzer and they had to push the button to let you in. And somebody hit the buzzer, she let him in, and the guy walked in. He had a suppressor on his on his pistol, walked in, and with it, he was in and out, I think, in under a minute, fired a shot at her, walked behind the counter, rummaged through some stuff, fired a second shot at her, just cool as a cucumber, put his gun back in his bag and walked right out the door. And the case has never been solved. And we talked to some people from the Taylor Police. We talked to some people from Michigan State Police. And it was, what was super interesting about it was, in that case, they were narrowing in on the fact that the gun jammed after he fired it, and then he had to clear the gun, and he looked like he knew what he was doing. He very efficiently and quickly clears the gun and shoots again. And when we talked to the rep from the Michigan State Police, he had said how you know, in all of his years, he's actually, despite what you see on TV, has never seen a silencer or a suppressor used in a crime like that. Like, okay. There's never one, and they've searched the databases and all this stuff. And he and anybody that like is real familiar with firearms knows the reason that the gun jammed is because the suppressor actually takes away some of the force that ejects the shell. So they tend to jam if you don't have a compensator in them. But we had just had that conversation with him about, you know, never seen anybody using a suppressor. And my kids have been searching all over the place to try to find other instances. And then just a couple of weeks ago that the man that killed the United Healthcare CEO, it was if you watch
yes.
the yeah
it was identical
him. Yeah, calm as can be, fires the shot, gun jams, he has to clear the gun, fires again, he had a suppressor on it. It was like lock and step the same way. So it was and that was really, I know the kids are like going to be integrating that into their thought process, because they were thinking, well, this must mean former military, and this must mean this. And then watch that, and I'm like, here's this guy that is none of those things.
Right.
And behaved in the exact same manner when he shot the CEO from United Healthcare. Same thing. Silencer, gun jammed, clears the gun, keeps going. And so it like kind of throws away, it goes back to, you know, how you feel about profiling and things like this. Like, the profile would suggest law enforcement, militia, military. Former military. And then you look, it's like, well, it wasn't there. You know, so I know it's super interesting. But then they also found the connection to what someone else had already found as well. There was some suppressors stolen from a sporting goods store not far from there. I think it was in Jackson.
They had him on video.
Yep. And they talked to and looks strikingly similar. But we actually had the intern that was working for the state police that made that connection. He Skyped in with the kids and talked to them about all of that. Yeah. But I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about it?
So in the Detroit area, I don't know if it's the same way on the west side of Michigan, but we have a lot of party stores. Mm-hmm. And if you're not from Michigan, you may not know that a party store is like a 7-Eleven, but they've got, you know, your booze, your cigarettes, your snacks, maybe some sandwiches, maybe some convenience items. But there's party stores everywhere. They're corner.
What's funny about that is in our current case from Benton Harbor,
yeah,
we were using the phrase, it's in the police reports, and I was using the phrase party store, and my audience from all over the world was like, what is a party store? Like,
yes.
They were thinking like Party City, something like that. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know what you call them other places, but that's what we call them here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a convenience store, but a vice store,
with your
smokes and your alcohol and and your vaping supplies. But they're ubiquitous in the Detroit area. And my father, when I did the episode, he listened to it and he said, you know, those party stores make a good profit cashing people's checks.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see a local party store owner being very upset that an Advance America store came in to take away their business.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And sent someone to make sure that the Advance America store got shut down. Now, just a theory. I thought it was interesting to entertain. I'm not sure that's what happened. But it made me sort of do a double take, because I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah. Well,
in terms of horning in on my business.
Because that's the baffling part because they did an in-depth victimology report, and there's nothing to indicate that there was anybody that had an issue with Chelsea.
Right. She was a lovely person.
Yeah. And then it was like, so what's the motive? Because they also didn't steal, I think they stole maybe a couple $100, whatever they could. Like, there was hardly any money. We have no, like, where's the motive in the whole thing? Like, never made any sense. So that's an interesting thought. And then one of the things that the kids, so first I had them look for other cash advance type murders in places similar to that, or crimes and thefts and robberies in them. And good Lord, there's so many of them. They're just finding dozens and dozens of them. But then they were working on a theory that maybe, you know, it was somebody that was just passing through. The reason they weren't concerned is, you know, they probably got in their vehicle. It's right on I-94 and this took off. So after the break, their next step is going to be looking at, instead of looking around Michigan, looking all down the I-94 corridor, you know, all the way over by Chicago to Detroit, and then, you know, I-90 and I-80 beyond there to see where those connections are at.
Yeah. I don't think Chelsea was the target. I think she was either happening to be there or they were expecting someone else to be there.
Yeah, because there was something where she had changed a shift or something like that, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, just one of the, this is nothing what I plan to talk about, but I'm just like, the work my kids are doing have me so like fascinated, and I'm just dying to get their work out. Are you familiar? I don't remember if we talked to you about this one, but the Jeanette Robertson case from Reed City?
Yes. Yeah.
So that one is really, so that case has me fascinated. I wish it was not as quality of a group of students working on that one, and that they would all just shit out, and so that I could take that and cover that
right.
case. Right. I've been up there twice. I've been to the store. Because I have a cabin up in that area.
Okay.
But we worked with Jenny Decker on that one.
Jenny's amazing and knows that case inside out.
Yeah. Well, and she had, you know, she passed along like the case files and the interview stuff she had. No one's ever, like, the only FOIA request case file that's ever been given was completely redacted. You couldn't see anything on it. One of my students, this is a sophomore, this is the 15-year-old kid, filed multiple FOIA requests and was changing language and trying to get things right. And she, right before the break, just got a 166-page case file from the Michigan State Police. It's redacted, but like a normal redaction. You know, there's most of it's there. It's just some names and stuff are redacted out of it. But yeah, we all of a sudden got this massive packet that no one's ever seen before. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So now we're all in. We're actually going up there with a field trip with that group on January 18th, because they do like a walk to remember for Jeanette.
Yes.
And so we got approved to, like, they went there and they like pitched it to the principal and superintendent. Every time we've done something like this, I'm like, you have to explain to them what the value is in this for us to take the time and the expense and everything to go up there. Then they can go up. They want to, you know, be a part of honoring the victim, and they want to be just a part of the group. And then also there's going to be a bunch of people there that they can interview in person for the podcast. And so they got approved. So January 18th, we're going up there to the, so any of you that are from the Michigan area, Reed City, January 18th, you can come to the Jeanette Robertson Walk to Remember.
I love that you're doing that. And I love that you're facilitating this for the students. I think it's, I mean, I'm just so touched that you all are going up for the memorial walk, but I just think it's amazing. So kudos.
Yeah, I'm loving it. But I did not expect the jealousy to sink in that I have when they found, because I didn't give them cases.
Right.
I was like, you guys find, as a matter of fact, I didn't, my assignment wasn't to find a true crime case to work on. The assignment was for a year-long project, in groups, find a real life situation outside the walls of these school where your work and your reporting on it can make a real life difference in the real world. They all ended up, probably because they're, you know, I'm their teacher, so they all ended up with doing like true crime cases. But some of the cases, like that one, is just absolutely fascinating to me. And
it is.
And it should be solvable. It really should be solvable.
A well-built wardrobe is about pieces that work together and hold up over time. And that's what Quince does best. Premium materials, thoughtful design, and everyday staples that feel easy to wear and easy to rely on. Quince has the everyday essentials that I actually use. Organic cotton sweaters, polos that work with just about anything, lighter jackets that keep you warm when the seasons start changing. It's all the stuff you reach for over and over again. They work directly with top factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're not paying for brand markups. You're just paying for quality clothing. And they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. For me, I ordered a pair of their corduroy pants, and they're giving me straight-up retro vibes from high school back in the 90s. They look great, feel great, and they didn't cost what you would expect for this level of quality. So listen, you can up your wardrobe game too, and they got a great deal just for our listeners. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/rough for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rough. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rough.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So, nutshell version of her case, she was working at a hardware store in the lower level by herself in the pet department, and someone came into the store sight unseen, beat her to death, left the store sight unseen, and the workers upstairs had no idea.
And customers. The store was open. Yeah.
Yeah. It was in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an absolutely bizarre, crazy, disturbing case. She was a beautiful girl. She was a mother. Just baffling that this could happen. If you made a movie about this, you'd be like, oh, that's not realistic.
Yeah.
But it 100% happened, and she's still waiting for justice, and her family is still waiting for justice.
Yeah. And that's one, like, I'm confident it can be solved. The same student, her name's Chelsea, that filed the FOIA request and is kind of the lead on that. Again, this is a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
That is the lead in that group. Like, she has theories in her profile that I think, like, on my own, I'm obsessed with the case. I'm reading it, yes, on my own and letting them do the, and like, I thought, oh, I think they were looking in the wrong direction. I think it could be this. This is what I'm seeing from the profile and stuff. And I had Jim Clementi came in and like taught them about victimology and profiling and things like that. And then Chelsea came to me and she's like, Mr. Ruff, I think it was, and she, I'm not going to give it away, right, but I was like, that's the exact same thing I thought. Like, yeah. And it's not the same thing anyone else has ever really considered. So yeah, super excited about that one.
Yeah, Jenny Decker literally wrote the book on that case. So if you're, mm-hmm, interested, I think the book is called Redacted.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's been a huge help for us too. And she's somebody else that I want to bring on to talk. I don't know if she's still doing it, her podcast.
Down and Away, I believe.
Yeah,
she is.
She's still doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's been like, she sent the interview notes from all the interviews she did on the case years ago. So they have like the list of everything that everyone told her and all of her interviews. Yeah. There's some long form YouTube videos that Jenny's put together on the case. Like, it's super duper interesting.
Well, and she's really good. I just want to give her a shout out for being generous with her sources, because she's given me information on cases, mm-hmm, that she didn't have to. You know, I asked her about a case and she's like, here's the entire file, which is lovely. And I'd love to see more of that in the true crime space.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, you know, I have you on here and Jenny, because everyone that I have, I make, as you know, like, I have my students make the contact. You know, I tell them, if you're interested in this case, find out if there's any other media on it. Let's figure out who the people are that have done media, and why don't you reach out to, and, you know, they're like, you know, well, this Nina Instead from Already Gone. So, you know, I help them by giving them your contact, but I'm like, you need to reach out to her and you talk to her and you set up a time to meet with her and then see. And then everybody that we've talked to has just been so incredibly helpful with access to people and information. Jenny's shared tons of case material. We have one of the other local cases we're doing. The son of one of the victims has his own podcast, and he shared a bunch of case material with us. Jenny has, Mike has, like, everybody that's been involved. And that's the kind of the community and the reason, like, this season that I'm doing between our cases, that I'm doing this, is because I think that all of us that are out there trying to actually make a difference in the world should, yes, be working together and promoting and supporting each other, because I just put out a bonus episode this weekend, just kind of refreshing one of the cases that we'd worked on a few years ago, and just talk about how few and far between the wins are when you're doing this kind of work. It's a lot of heartbreak and a lot of dead ends. So we need to be lifting up each other all the time and trying to really promote to keep the work going.
Yes. Because
I'm sure you feel the same as I, every once in a while you have those days where you're like, I'm just sick of fucking doing this. Like I'm so tired. I'm so tired of getting beat down all the time.
Yeah. It can be exhausting work. And that's one of the things I like about doing the missing persons work is we find people. We don't always find people. Sometimes it's not the answer we hoped for, but the people that we can find, the families that we can help, makes it all worth it.
Yeah. And that is such, I didn't realize, you know, we talked probably about a year or so ago where I was going to do a season on missing persons cases. I thought, and a lot of it was just like, I needed a breather. I needed, you know, I needed a break from the wrongful conviction stuff. I'm just exhausted by it. And I thought, this is what I'll do. I can tell these stories all the time. And I found it so, like, it was emotionally draining for me. I can't, you know, I get that way. I get really attached to and get emotionally connected with the cases I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But they're long form and I'm working and I'm focused in one place for 6 months to a year. But man, when I was doing a different missing persons case every week, like I found I was just so sad all the time. And it was like in every case that we worked where somebody was found, because our whole thing we're going to do like right now active cases. And it was like one after another, like found dead, found dead, found dead. And like, yeah. I don't have it in me. I don't have it in me to do it. It was just neither just Janet on the show, like Zach, all of us, we're all too much of softies to handle that. We were just crying all the time on the,
yeah.
I really appreciate people that are, and I know it's sad for you and everybody else too, but it's work somebody's got to do and I'm not the guy to do it.
Right. No, I totally get that. I met with, on Saturday, right before the holiday, I met with the brother of a 15-year-old girl who went missing in 1981. He cried. I cried. It was very emotional, but he was so grateful that someone cares about his sister.
Yeah.
He was so grateful because it's been 43 years, almost 44 years, and she's still missing. And her case has always been of interest to me because she vanished and there's very little out there about her case, which I don't understand. She was a child. So I was very grateful that he gave me the time to speak with him and very grateful for the time we spent together. But then I came home and I was just like, oof, I needed to have a little drink and just chill on the sofa. Yeah, I had a bourbon and I sat on the sofa and was just like, I'm just going to vibe for a couple hours.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, my format was going to be that I would do cases where I could get a family member of the missing person to come on to share their story. And it was, you know, and it was effective. It was, you know, give them a chance to talk, give them an opportunity to share the story, get more eyes and ears on the cases. But it was just like, I can't do it. I cannot do it over and over and over again. Like my mental health was just declining rapidly when I was doing it. And also you find out too that, you know, there's so many, you know, when I first started doing it, I started researching how many active missing person cases are there. And it was like hundreds and hundreds a day. And there was all these. And then when you get into them, lots and lots and lots of them are, you know, teenagers that ran off with their boyfriends or, you know, custody foster disputes.
Yeah.
Foster kids, things like that. There weren't, you know, it was like trying to find the ones that were someone that was truly missing where truly nobody knew where they were. And those cases tend to move fast and they tend to end so many times with tragic results.
Yeah. Well, and I want to speak up for my foster kids and my kids that ran off with their boyfriends and my runaway kids. They're kids and they need to be found safe. So I see people, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but I see people sort of turn their nose up. Well, they ran away. And it's like, how many 15-year-olds do you know that are making good choices?
Right.
You know, if they've run away, they're not making a great choice. They need to be safe. We need to make sure they're safe. I'm sure their parents are an absolute wreck. So let's do our part to make sure they make it home in one piece.
Yeah. And you know, not what you just said, but just this conversation just reminded me of something I want to circle back on. One of the cases we covered was out on the East Coast. It was in Maine, but guy had gone, it was a young man, early 20s, had gone missing. And I was kind of I actually contacted law enforcement about that one because I had some theories and I was like really invested in it. And they ended up finding him dead and they arrested the person that I thought that likely had murdered him. And it just occurred to me while we're talking about this that I don't know what ever happened with that. I don't know if he went to trial. I don't know what happened. So I want to circle back for my listeners and for me to figure out what happened there.
Yes.
I do want to talk about before we wrap things up. We talked about one of your cases. I saw you just posted the other day about Danny's case. Do you want to share and talk a little bit about that one, so we at least get one of the cases out there to my audience?
Sure. So Danielle Stislicki went missing on December 2nd, 2016. Danny's case was of great interest to me because she lived just off Grand River Avenue in Farmington Hills, about a mile from where I was living at the time. So when I saw that, I was very curious, and I actually drove up and parked my car near her apartment and walked around looking for her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And later it came out that she worked at a building in Southfield, which happened to be the same building my husband worked in. And she was seen leaving that building with a former security guard. He had had some car trouble, and it appears that she offered him a ride to his home in Berkeley. And I don't believe that Danny left his home under her own accord. I don't think anything good happened in his home in Berkeley. Danny has never been seen or heard from again. The case is being handled by the Farmington Hills Police. Floyd Galloway, that security guard that she was last seen with who lived in Berkeley, is in prison serving a 7-to-15-year sentence for physically attacking and sexually assaulting a woman in Hines Park in Wayne County the September before Danny went missing. And her case is currently hung up in legal limbo because of some information that was shared that may have been fruit of a poison tree where privilege was violated, which is extremely frustrating. Danny's family is active with Missing in Michigan. We're very grateful for the Stislickies and what they have done to help other families. But we would really like to see Danny's case finally come to trial, hopefully in 2025.
Yeah. Is there anything that our listeners can do to help with the case or get more information on the case? I know you've done at least one episode on her case.
I did. Yeah, I did an episode where I worked with the assistant chief of police in Farmington Hills to put that episode together with the blessing of her family. Unfortunately, the evidence that's in question has to make its way through the courts to see whether or not it will be admissible. I can tell you that her case was in Oakland County, but the Oakland County prosecutor declined to pick it up because it's a nobody murder case, and those we know are notoriously difficult to prosecute.
Right.
But Dana Nessel's office did pick it up and wants to prosecute it. We're just waiting for the very slow wheels of justice to move.
Was this a situation where like a lawyer shared information or something? And you said the privilege was violated.
My understanding is the person who was administering the polygraph to Floyd Galloway heard some very distressing information. He then called his friend, who was the chief of police in Troy, and shared that information, violating privilege. Again, this is my understanding. I could be slightly off. And the chief of police in Troy called the chief of police in Farmington Hills.
Okay.
And gave him that information. So the breach of privilege caused some of the evidence to be called into question.
So they have this information, but they're possibly not going to be allowed to use it.
Correct. And I can tell you that Floyd Galloway's home in Berkeley was missing a comforter from a set. There was a chunk of carpeting that had been cut out with a razor from his home. So his home was very suspicious.
Right.
He was seen buying a comforter the next day. Floyd Galloway's wife, who I believe has since passed away, was receiving cancer treatments and was in hospital the day that Danny disappeared. So he had the house to himself.
Well, hopefully we get a resolution on that case. And the last thing that I want to do before I let you go is, with Missing in Michigan and all the work that organization is doing, is there anything that our listeners can do to help support the organization? Is there donations, volunteering? How can anybody do anything to help out with Missing in Michigan?
The main thing that we ask people to do is, if someone goes missing in your area and you see a legitimate missing persons post where there is law enforcement contact information, if that's in your area, please share it. Please boost the signal on that missing person. That's the number one thing. It's all about visibility with these missing persons cases. And sometimes people don't know that their neighbor is missing or their cousin is missing until they see it online. So getting the word out and making sure that there is appropriate law enforcement contact for the safety of the family is also very important.
Yeah. And a good example of that was when we were covering doing our missing persons case, There was a case that I had seen that it was out of, I believe it was Arizona. The kid's name was Jarrett Brooks. And he was one of those, as you mentioned earlier, teenager that ran off. I was real hesitant to share the case because he had, it looked like he had taken a firearm from the house when he left. And I was like, man, I don't want to like point people to go looking for this person who maybe has a gun. We don't know what's going on. And there was a lot of that sentiment online. It seemed like I did talk to his mother a few times and tried to help where we could. But people were looking at it. It was just another teen ran off somewhere. It's going to be fine. And then nobody was interested in sharing or covering the case. And now it's been a year and a half, and he is still missing and considered in danger.
Yeah.
And you think, like, if people had taken that seriously and shared it like you're talking about, that perhaps Jarrett could have been found right away, as opposed to now people are finally getting on board down in Arizona and sharing it, but he's already been gone for a year and a half now.
That's one of the things that you need to keep in mind with these runaway cases, is they can shift to endangered missing very quickly. And We really need to take them seriously and protect these kids.
Right. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and let you go, Nina. I have got more cleaning up to do after we still have boxes and wrapping paper all over my house. But thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you and the work that you're doing, and wish you nothing but luck. And everybody check out on the 1st and the 15th, the Already Gone podcast with Nina Instead.
Thanks, Bob.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. Doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits. Sharia, who's making progress with meds. And Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.